I'm going to be very quick and give you a, sorry, not very quick. I'm going to be very thorough and give you a quick review of what the certified rate is and how it's calculated, and then how an unintended consequence of how it was calculated and the hold harmless agreement as part of that rate became a problem, and where there's a real tax transparency issue. You'll forgive me if I result to PowerPoint, but there's no other way that I can give you this information. Calculating the certified tax rate. Basically, the certified tax rate is a rate that when you take all of the values, the assessed values, will create the same revenue for the taxing entity. Whatever that entity is, it will create the same revenue for that entity. That's the basics of the certified tax rate. Then you can take that revenue that's created as a portion of that rate or as a creature of that rate and add on top of it, multiply that rate times the new growth values, and that then is then added to the tax value. So really quickly, let's see if this little laser thing works. A graphical way to display that is you take the present year revenue, you take the taxable value and you minus the new growth rate. That's your denominator with the previous year's revenue as the numerator, and you divide the two, and that equals your certified rate. So in this scenario, if you take an example, if an entity from a tax perspective got $10,000 as their previous year's revenue, and their assessed value is $5.5 million, and of that $5.5 million, 0.5 million is new growth. You subtract that out, that gives you the rate then of 0.002. Everybody nod if you're bored. Excellent. I didn't see enough nodding, so I'm going to keep going. Next time you'll participate better? No? Okay. All right. Okay, so applying the certified rate, multiply it times your revenue, and then you get $11,000, remember, which is an increase over the 10,000 number. All that's because of new growth. Let's see if I can get through quickly. Here's another new growth example. So the certified tax rate in Truth in Taxation, cities, counties, school districts, special districts, they go through their budgeting process. They determine whether or not the certified rate generates either A, sufficient revenue, B, too much revenue, or C, insufficient revenue. Which one do you think they usually decide it is? It's always B, right? There's not enough money. Okay. Or sorry, it's C, sorry, not B, too much revenues, thank you. So if there's sufficient revenue, they can just adopt the certified rate, move forward. If there's too much revenue, also an unlikely scenario, they can adopt a lower rate. Although, there are entities throughout the state who do this on a regular basis. If there is insufficient revenue, they can go through the draconian, in their view, draconian truth and taxation process. In my view, a wonderful, transparent opportunity to educate the voter on the services they're providing and make an appropriate decision on whether or not that should be provided, the truth and taxation process. So a couple questions. What if new growth is zero? In this scenario, you get your certified rate, multiply it times your revenue, you still have the same revenue from the year before. If zero and revenue is insufficient, you can go through two ways to get more revenue. Obviously, new growth was zero, but number two, the truth and taxation process could increase their certified rate. Okay, we're going to deal with new growth because that's where we found the problem. Okay, new growth in its purest form, in my mind, means that something new was added to the tax base that then adds value to the overall area and requires new services. Police, fire, you name it. That's the concept, and you should be able to capture that and then increase your services and increase your revenue to cover those services appropriately, right? So the other element, though, is a change. So that's a change in value compared to the prior year, and we'll talk about that in just a minute. Number one is the one that we're talking about, the new buildings and improvements. The other is a change in value, and we'll talk about those kind of values in just a second. So here's the new sticks and bricks for new growth. The changes can be a change in locally assessed personal property or a change in value for centrally assessed properties. Okay, Essentially, possessed properties tend to be large, complicated values to, entities to value, and as a result, State Tax Commission is the one who oversees that process. So let me just give you an illustration. If you have a new subdivision for $1,000 that creates a new growth of $1,000, you have personal property personal property value increases by $100. You should have $1,100 in new growth. However, in this scenario, if commodity prices fall by $500, it cuts into this new growth, and you're affected negatively because of a market event that doesn't have anything to do with services that are provided, or they aren't really connected. And so the problem is there's sensitivity in this commodity markets that create problems in the tax structure. And I'll show you that problem here in a second. New growth, though, has a zero floor. So in this scenario, the $500 is accounted for because it's absorbed by the zero floor. So this scenario we look at, locally assessed real was at 1,000, personal property in this scenario is at negative 500, centrally assessed is at negative 1,000, and in this scenario, your overall increase would be negative 500. But because of the hold harmless that I mentioned earlier, you get zero. Okay, that's actually a system that we decided as a state a long time ago that we would be more interested in controlling revenue and making sure revenue stayed at a neutral position throughout the independent entities. The state does not function this way, and neither do your businesses. Does anybody have a hold harmless in their business that says they automatically get to count net losses as zero? Dang, I was really hoping they had somebody had an example of how this might work. Okay, it doesn't work that way. So let me show you a certified, let me flip forward. So what this can create is, and this is the tax situation that we found, is let's say that there's growth between year one and year two in both centrally assessed and locally assessed real, and so as a result, you get new growth. So you take the year two, from year one to year two growth, you put it over to the side. Year three comes up, another growth year. Throw that over to the side. Year four comes up, you got another year of growth in both centrally assessed, or they net out so that there's growth, you still have growth. Year four moves over to the side. This is now the new revenue base, right? I'm trying to demonstrate this in a basic graphic way. The next year five, another year of growth, it stacks over there on top, right? So this becomes, oops, let me go back. This becomes now the new revenue, and it, you know, the counties, the cities, the school districts, everybody gets held harmless at this number from now on, okay? What happens, though, if there is a net loss? Okay, and that's what year six illustrates. So year six says, well, commodity prices fell, there was no new growth, but the revenue was held harmless. So revenue gets to stay here or gets to stay at the year five top number despite the fact that these losses occur. Okay, raise your hand if you're still into this. I got four. Okay, that's good. Raise your hand if you want me to go longer. Okay, good, I still got four. Commissioner Valentine knows where his bread's buttered. Okay, so I'm just kidding. I'm just giving him a hard time. Okay, so year six, though, in year seven, when there's new growth in commodity prices and new growth is, you know, there's beneficial new growth, right? In this scenario, because of where this was, the year six loss gets to count as growth. Look what just happened to revenue, despite the fact that they already got the year six growth, or the year six correction was a correction from these years. This is a way that our entities have been giving us tax increases behind the curtain. Now, in their defense, they're just as educated by this scenario as we are. Fair? Trying to be fair. I promise not to beat up on them too much. Even though they opposed the bill to try and fix it. But that's a whole other issue. So anyway, my problem in this fundamental issue is something that Senator Stevenson often repeats, which is programs always have a champion, but equity never does. That fundamentally has become a badge of honor for me and is something principally I care deeply about. Equity for the taxpayer is an important element, and it's got to be part of the solutions that we've looked at. Let me just show you a couple of other interesting slides that will, I think, be interesting to you. If not, just pretend like you are. So these are non-commodity-based. So what we did was we separated out new growth. We took out new growth, and we said, well, if we bifurcated a little bit and said locally assessed real is one element, and then another element are, you know, commodity-based price, commodity-based centrally assessed businesses whose value rises and falls with the commodity markets. Okay, you know, coal producers, power producers, oil and gas. These are the kinds of centrally assessed things that rise and fall more frequently. So if you look at that sensitivity, these are non-commodity-based new growth over the last 10 years. And you can look. The standard deviation in a lot of these is largely positive and very little negative growth. I mean, there is one here. There's some fluctuating. But for the most part, it's a flat growth line. And these are just different categories of non-commodity base. Here is a commodity-based line, though, that gives you some input into there is more volatility in the commodity base. The commodity-based volatility is a standard deviation between, and I apologize if Leif's back there, he'll probably remember the number off the top of his head. Between 15 and 17 is the standard deviation for commodity-based. In other words, there's a lot more volatility as opposed to the single-digit volatility in sticks and bricks new growth. The other, and I don't have a slide for this, unfortunately, the other that is even more volatility is the local assessed personal property, business personal property, and the fluctuation from that is much more. You can imagine if you were a power plant or whatever and you spent a lot of money buying some particular asset, and then you spent the next 25 years of its depreciable life depreciating it. And, you know, you're going to see those losses, but you're going to see those spikes. And so, unfortunately, those spikes are dramatic. Okay. Seeing that I've lost even Commissioner Valentine, I just appreciate that that everyone is, you know, we've taken some blunt force trauma ways at trying to solve the problem. The counties are committed, and so are we, to trying to solve this problem for the benefit of the taxpayer. And with that, I will conclude. Thank you.
Thanks, Representative. A lot of what Representative McKay talks about, we candidly agree with. Some of these issues that were brought forward were certainly news to us as taxing entities. So the counties usually take kind of the brunt of most of these discussions because we're the ones that send out the tax notices. But this dynamic that we've been talking about affects all taxing entities. So the impact of this is significant in that it will affect school districts, special districts, counties and cities, and their relative tax value, as well as what sort of revenue they receive. The history of the issue, and a lot of people have asked, how did he come up with this? This doesn't seem something easy to get your arms around. So why are we having this discussion, and how is it borne out? It actually was the result of an audit done by the state auditor 2 years ago at the request of a taxing entity, Salt Lake City. Mayor Becker requested that the auditor look into the issue as to why they were having massive construction in Salt Lake City, but not realizing any of the new growth revenue off of that local construction within their community. When they looked into the information, what they found is while City Creek was coming online, at the same time, you had Kennecott with a major slide, which was pulling down the centrally assessed valuation. So while we were having new service demands because of City Creeks and other development within the cities, you were seeing this negative pull-down effect because you were seeing a change in either commodity prices or production of centrally assessed properties. So that interplay between centrally assessed and locally assessed became the issue. This was not an issue that the taxpayers per se brought to the attention of the auditor, but something that came as the request of the taxing entities. In that discussion, what we realized is there was also a scenario where you could have the stacking that was discussed by Representative McKay. In those circumstances where you have negative new growth in centrally assessed that outweighs local new growth, It does have the effect of potentially allowing for stacking. Now, the representation on the graph certainly demonstrates as though this is happening frequently. As we've went through the tax rolls, what we've identified is in the last 20 years, it's happened 3 times in Salt Lake County. 2 of those times were major issues with Kennecott. So this is not pervasive in many of the areas throughout the state, but there are circumstances where it can be. Some of those circumstances are Millard County or out in the Uinta Basin, where you can have major changes in valuation either based on production or bringing on personal property to IPA, or in the circumstances of the basin where you have either production declines or a significant change in the commodity prices, which affect the new growth component. So in those circumstances, you could see negative new growth outpace locally assessed new growth, and in those circumstances get some of the stacking that we're talking about. The dilemma that we have is, as Representative McKay pointed out, we're working in a revenue-based system, not a rate-based system. And there's pros and cons to both systems. The revenue-based system that he described is one in which we guarantee a certain amount of revenue to the taxing entities. The alternative is a rate-based system, which is you set a rate, that's the rate, regardless of valuation. The con to that system, and I think the reason the state chose a revenue-based system, is in a rate-based system where you have a flat rate, if your home appreciates in value, you get a tax increase. Even though production hasn't changed, you haven't built anything new, just a simple change in valuation increases the tax burden. So in those circumstances, we opted for this alternative, which is the revenue-based system, which says we're going to float the rate and guarantee a revenue to the taxing entities, but that rate floats. So that's the dynamic that we're trying to work off of. As I mentioned, this is an anomaly. It's not the ordinary in most of these taxing districts or in the counties, but we are committed to working through the issue. We met on Tuesday of this week as counties with Representative McKay to start going over potential solutions. And some of those solutions include things such as isolating centrally assessed from locally assessed in determining the certified tax rate. And the reason for that is we've recognized there is likely going to be significantly more volatility in centrally assessed valuations than you will see in locally assessed, which was pointed out in his slide, where you see the standard deviation in commodity-based prices hovering around 16 points, whereas in locally assessed sticks and bricks, it's one or two. It's a modest deviation from the norm. So we're trying to figure out solutions. It's a lot of data to cull through for many taxing districts throughout the state of Utah, and we're trying to do something that is fair and equitable to each county, school district, water conservancy district, et cetera.
Taxpayer.
The taxpayer as well. The concern we have is obviously as we're culling through all of this data, one solution works really well for a lot of folks, but it may have a very detrimental effect either in the basin or in Millard County, some of those areas. So trying to find a solution that works on a statewide basis has been difficult, which is the reason the Association of Counties and many of the taxing districts opposed the bill last year. But as we mentioned in that opposition, we're willing to work towards a solution on figuring out a way in which we can address the standard deviation concern as well as address the stacking issue that Representative McKay has brought forward. So with that, we too recognize that the taxpayer has a concern. It is a legitimate concern. While it may be an anomaly, it is still an unfair anomaly and something that we need to address. On the contrary, we also need to address the issue that Salt Lake City pointed out, which was what happens when we're seeing significant new growth but not getting any revenue to provide the services because it's getting washed out by depreciation or negative new growth and centrally assessed. Coupling those together, I think we can come up with a solution that's equitable to both the taxpayer and addresses the concerns that have been brought forward by the taxing entities. With that, happy to answer any questions. Thank you.